Welcome to Sassy. I'm Annie Murlowski and I'm your host. Each week we share the inspiring stories of female leaders throughout the tech industry. Thanks for joining us as we dive into the inspiring stories of career growth and development from women who are leading technology as we know it. Thank you so much for joining us on this week's episode of Sassy. I am so excited to be joined by Lotny Conant, who is one of my favorite female leaders in software. I have always been really amazed at watching what she's doing out in the market. And so I was really excited for the opportunity to have her join us today. Welcome, Lotny.
And thanks for having me. I'm excited to get sassy. I love it.
Awesome. Well, let's talk a little bit about what you're doing now. And I'm curious, you know, particularly for you to talk a little bit about the transition that you recently made from being a CMO to being a CRO and why that was part of your journey and how you feel about that evolution for the community as a whole.
Yeah. So I loved being a CMO, a chief market officer. It was really awesome. What changed, and they say, you know, luck is a combination of maybe be of prepared and opportunity. But, you know, I had an opportunity here that presented itself really just based on the fact that, like, we had grown tremendously. So Sixth Sense has grown 100% year over year the last 5 years. And through that growth, we went from being a single product to being a multi-product platform. And with that, a larger and larger part of our revenue wanting to come from existing customers, which created an opportunity to think about our leadership structure and think about our own need to be extremely aligned across what I would say is the revenue team, but also with product. And so we just felt we needed more alignment on the revenue side across marketing, sales, customer success, professional services, partnerships, and customer experience. So we kind of all agreed and felt we needed this, you know, had this need. You know, the challenge is there's not a lot of people that have experience across all of those things, myself included, you know. But when we started to interview and go out and talk to various folks, it became abundantly clear that, you know, we really needed someone who understood our customer better than anybody else. And, you know, I fortunately, in my role at Sixth Sense in marketing, got to really use our product, be customer zero. I talked to about 20 to 30 customers a week. And so it was just clear that empathy and that passion for our customers was there probably more than anyone else. And so, you know, that we would go and hire externally. And so that's kind of how the opportunity came about. And that's most of my focus is on, you know, how we continue to evolve, not just what we offer to customers, but how we support them on their journey. You know, one of the really cool things about Sixth Sense is it's not just some data. It's not just an app. It's not just AI. Ultimately, like, what we deliver is go-to-market transformation. And so that requires technology, that requires services, that requires strategy, and that requires an ecosystem. And we want to be able to bring that in a meaningful way to our customers.
That's awesome. And do you think that's unique to Sixth Sense or, you know, MarTech? Or do you think that you'll see more of this in other types of software? Because I feel like we're starting to see more and more that particularly marketing and customer success will roll underneath that revenue or that go-to-market leader function.
You know, it depends. Like, and I honestly have mixed feelings about it because I hate seeing a CMO that just ends up reporting to sales. Because I think sometimes, like, so much of marketing is strategy. And so, you know, it can work. But I think the can means that, like for example, Saima, who runs marketing for us now, she's on our ELT, right? So yes, she reports to me, but she still has a big voice with, you know, our executive team and creating our strategy. And so I think that that's just an important nuance of how you design it to make sure that, yes, there's alignment in how you execute, but these critical functions still have a big voice in your strategy.
I love that. I think that that is a really good point, is that making sure that you don't lose the voice of those functions in rolling those functions underneath one unified leader.
Yeah. Or they just get watered down, you know?
Definitely. Well, what are some of the milestones that you feel like happened throughout your career that really led you to this point today?
Gosh. So, you know, it's interesting. Like I go to a lot of CMO events, host a lot of CMO events, and some of the most savvy CMOs talk a lot about like how they pick the companies and how they look at opportunities. And I always sit there and I'm like, I don't do any of that. Like I have been fortunate, I guess, in that I really have always gravitated to companies where I really just ultimately believed in what they were doing, like believed in their product or solution or service and really like bled it, you know? And so that's always been like my first criteria is just like passion for like, what are we actually doing? What are we solving? And then the other thing I've always looked at is like really great people that I want to be friends with, people that I think I can learn from. And I think that has served me well in that, I've really enjoyed every day, right? Like I come to work all fired up about some new idea or some new thing we're going to do. And it really is energizing to like feel connected to, you know, the problem we're solving and how we enable customers. But then to be able to do it around people that I love and that challenge me and that I have fun with is just that other dimension. And both of those things seem cliche, but that's really what's guided me and I think opened a lot of doors and also allowed me, especially as you take on more and more leadership roles, like you need your team, you know, you need your band, right? And I talk about like, yeah, there's people that I've worked with at a couple companies now in a row. And it's like, and we don't always agree. And it's like, I'm like, it's like Fleetwood Mac. Like, you know, we fight, we get upset. I'm like, but we make really good music. You know? Rumors is a great album. And so, you know, I think that's just a big thing that you learn the more you're at this is you're only as good as like the people that you're able to do it with.
I love that. I think that that's great. Like that you have those people that you've worked with in multiple roles and you continue to challenge each other. Like, I think that that's one of the best things you can have is to have those people who you can really have countering opinions and still work together well.
Mm-hmm.
So for most roles, you know, and particularly, you know, in the technology space and the MarTech space, these jobs and these pieces of software didn't exist when we were children. Like you didn't, you know, as a child, you weren't like, I really want to work for a piece of tech that helps people do better marketing and sales. So what was it that you wanted to do as a child? And do you think that some of that ties into what you do today? Some of that passion?
I really wanted to make money. I've always been like, wanted to live a good life, I guess, and wanted to live a better life. And so to me, like making money was security. It was just really important. And so I remember I wanted to be a heart surgeon because I read somewhere that they like made a lot of money. And so I interned with like a heart surgeon in high school and I was all into biology and this and that. And the reason I laugh now is like, I can't even draw a straight line or sew a stitch. Like, I am not coordinated at all. Like I'm always like falling and bumping around. Like I would have been horrible, like so bad, you know, but I was always like highly motivated, right, to have a big job. And so I started in chemistry lab and I was in college. That's like the first prerequisite, you know, to pre-med. And I mean, I was so bad. I destroyed so much. I had this huge bill coming out. Like beakers I had broken. wave up. So I quickly adjusted and went into business because I realized that actually accountants and CPAs were getting signing bonuses. So that was my next move. So that's just very transparent. That's the truth.
I love that. But I think that to an extent, maybe you could say that what you do today is the heart of any business. And that you're still doing a little bit of surgery on that heart.
Okay, good. Yes, exactly. Exactly.
So let's talk a little bit about challenges that kind of have happened before you got to the role that you're in. And how did you overcome them? Like, what's a particular challenge that you feel like has shaped who you are today?
So I had a lot of trouble reading. And what my parents came to find out was that I had dyslexia. And at that time, it wasn't common. And so the school I was in did not know what to do with me. And I was kind of told that there was something wrong and I would never read. And my parents like kind of refused to believe that. And they always had really high expectations of me, no matter what. And so they pulled me out of school and I learned how my brain worked. And I did a lot of different like occupational therapy. Like I remember there was this really hard clay that I would have to like mold. I don't know why, but that was part of it. And then I went back to a new school and I had like special services and stuff to like help me. But when I went to that new school, I said, I want to go by my middle name. My first name was Barclay. And so I sort of rebranded myself in second grade when I went to this new school. I said, I don't want to go by my first name anymore. I want to be a new person. I want to be smart. I want to be successful in school. I want to be Latiny. And that Latiny is smart and successful in school. And I just kind of made up my mind. And part of that, I realized that I just had to work harder than everyone else. And I was okay with that. And that has served me well because I'm never afraid to work hard. And so a lot of things that you want, like to do great things, it's a lot of hard work. And so that I think has given me a confidence that I can achieve what I need to achieve because I'll probably outwork everybody else.
I love that motivation that like starts very young. And it's different when things come easy to people. Like they sometimes take things for granted. And when that doesn't come easy, it's, you know, really a different kind of motivator.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, how do you maintain a work-life balance? And, you know, you've got a lot on your plate. You're responsible for a lot of people and a lot of parts of the business. So what do you try to do to make sure that you maintain that? And do you think that it's different in your position as a woman than it might be for a male counterpart?
Jeez. I think it's very dependent on your spouse. And so I would say if I would have one piece of advice, it's pick an awesome partner, like pick a great spouse. Like if you want to have it all, a big career as well as, you know, a family and friends, like so much comes back to like the relationship with your spouse and how you share the load. And, you know, what I think we've done a nice job of is just understanding like peaks and valleys, right? There's times where I'm more on first base because whatever's going on with me. And there's other times where it's like, he's got to be more on first base and there's no scorekeeping. It's just like this ebbing and flowing and understanding where we're at as a family. And so, you know, and I think the other thing is like, I'm okay outsourcing things. There's some things I don't take any pride in the laundry. So I'm fine dropping it off at the laundromat and, you know, or whatever. Like my life hack I tell everyone is I have two washers and two dryers. So we can get through the laundry in like one day and it's done. So, you know, I kind of am like, it's okay not do it all, especially the things that I don't care to do. And then I have really embraced a broader unit than just our 4-pack. I have 2 kids and my husband. So, you know, our unit is my sister. My sister lived with us for like 13 years. You know, my in-laws live across the street from me. Our best friends, we met our best friends in daycare. And we still do every holiday with them, every vacation. You know, if I need to phone a friend, like I have a friend that I can phone. And I think it's made our life so much richer. It's helped share the load. So there's a necessity to it, but it's also just like so much richer. And I think that the fact that my children have other adults that love them and see them and know them other than just Carson and I, like, I think that's a gift. And I had that growing up. I had a godmother who was really like my other mother. And so I remember that, like thinking, God, I'm so lucky that I have like, and I was really close with my grandfather, like having multiple adults. And so that's kind of what we've created. And that's allowed me to feel okay taking the trip, traveling halfway around the world, you know, or whatever it is, because the kids are okay.
That's very much that like the village mentality of life. And I think as women, at least for me in particular, you know, I feel a lot of pressure to do it all. And I think that reminder that you don't have to do it all. You don't have to do the laundry. You can pay someone else to do the laundry. Like, that is an option. And I think that it's so important for us to remember that. I had a boss very early on in my career. I worked at an agency, and she had said, I have a gardener because it's not worth my hours, my billable hours, to mow my lawn.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's a really good point. She's like, I can either pay him $30 an hour to mow my lawn, or I can pay myself $150 an hour to mow my lawn. And I would rather bill that $150 out. And I was like, okay, that's actually really wise. That's really smart. So it's like that, finding that balance. What is it that you think is the most valuable use of your time? And then on the flip side, having that support system that is surrounding you.
Yeah. And then I will, you know, this isn't a question that you've asked, but I'm going to volunteer it, is because a lot of times I get asked, like, you know, do you think I should take this next role or this next job? Is it going to like affect my work-life balance? Or I'm worried it's going to be too stressful and then I'm not going to have work-life balance. And what I have personally found is that my stress and my work-life balance has stayed the exact same no matter what role I've had. I bring the work, I bring the stress to myself. I bring the work, I create the structure, you know, and so to me, you know, if you have the opportunity to do more, and again, back to money, and monetize your time more effectively, I don't work harder or stress more. I just am able to do more. So, and have more actual control. Like, the higher you get up, the more actually, to be honest, the more control you have over your own schedule in some ways. So if you're out there listening and you're thinking, oh, I don't want to raise my hand, it's going to impact work-life balance or whatever, I challenge you to think about that and maybe just go for it.
I think that's really good advice, because there's so much of our work-life balance is our personal boundaries and our internal, how we interpret stress and project management. So do you think in tech, like, have you ever experienced bias or seen bias, and what, how do you typically handle those kinds of situations?
I mean, it happens all the time. And I think sometimes it's worth like making a big deal of, and sometimes it's just like, whatever, I'm not going to worry about that right now. You know, one place I was, it was two companies I was at were really bad, and I left. So, you know, you just have to assess, like, is this something that I think can evolve and change, or is this just too far gone? And, you know, after those two, it's always been great, but those were horrible.
Well, that makes sense. I think that there is, like, there's a piece of me that's like, we want to talk about and fight bias. But then there is a piece where it's, you know, is this doing myself a service, or am I actually making it worse for me? And you have to take care of yourself first.
Right. Right. There's like, if they're already 90% and it's like, oh, we can get a little better, great, it's worth it. If it's like, this is the dark ages, like, I can't, like, there's only so much raging against this machine I can even do. So you got to know when to hold them and know when to fold them, I guess.
As who is that? Kenny, is that Kenny Loggins? The gambler. I don't know whose music that is. Kenny Rogers?
Kenny Rogers. Kenny Rogers, or is it Willie? No, it's Kenny Rogers. Yeah.
It's Kenny Rogers, not Kenny Loggins. No, I think that's, I agree. That's a really good like piece of advice to think about when you're like faced with a situation where you have to make a decision, that sometimes it is in fact the best choice to fold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So then in that same vein, you know, what do you think is the most important thing for deciding what companies you want to work with, either as like, this is where you're taking your career, or just companies you want to partner with?
I mean, like, again, especially if you're in a commercial role, like, love the product, love the solution, like, be all in on like what it, where it's going and what it's doing. And then, you know, who are the people that you're going to be working with? Do they make you laugh? Are they self-aware? Will you learn from them? You know, those are the things I think that I've always kind of looked at and have served me well.
And then have you had a mentor who's really helped shape your career as you've grown?
So I think the more important thing is a sponsor, not a mentor. So mentors tell you advice, and that's great. We all need coaching. We all need advice. But sponsors put you in the game. sponsors say, let's give her that role, or I think she would be good for that, or we've got this new thing, why don't you take it on? And I think that if you want to have a great career, or at least what I've seen in my career, is there have been three pivotal sponsors that changed the trajectory of my career 1,000 times over. And if it weren't for them, I would, like, things would look very, very different. And so I think it's just knowing, you know, making sure you have a few of those that put you in. Because at every company, there's some new product line. There's some new initiative. There's something important that needs to happen. And there's a room where people are saying, who's going to run this? Who could we put in charge of this? And so you need someone who's saying, I think she can do it, if you want opportunities.
I love that. I think that that's a really wise way to think about, like, it's not mentorship, it's sponsorship. These are the people who, to an extent, will hold the keys in your journey, and making sure that as that person who may need that sponsor on the flip side, that you're fostering those relationships as well.
Well, and they're also putting up, a mentor puts up no political capital to mentor you. None. A sponsor is saying, I bet myself on this person.
I like that distinction. I think that's a really good distinction, because then they're giving something to you as well, because they know that, like, they want to make sure you're representing them to the best mm-hmm. of your ability in the same sense. Mm-hmm. So then what advice would you give to women who are looking at a career in SaaS and that they might be hesitant for whatever reason?
I mean, I think it offers, like, so much flexibility, so much opportunity, so many places to go with it. So, I mean, I've loved being in this industry. I think there's a lot of creativity that you can apply, you know, no matter your background or your discipline, like, there's so many different roles and applicability to apply it. So I would say, come on in, the water's fine.
I love that. I think there's so much. It's one of the reasons I was drawn to the software space, is that there's just so much coming out right now. There's so much evolution, and it's always changing, and it makes it really, you know, it's not boring.
Yeah, exactly.
So then, as kind of our closing question, I always like to ask something that's a little bit fun. And so what is your either must read or must watch right now? And it can be professional, it can be personal, you can give me one of both. What's really, like, something that you're enjoying consuming as far as content goes?
Well, I love to read fiction. And so I always try to, like, read stuff that, like, people in my life have read or liked, so then we can talk about it. So right now I'm reading a book called The No-No Boy, which was, my son read it for school and he loved it, and so he gave it to me. So that's what I'm reading right now.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us on Sassy. I hope everyone enjoyed hearing your story as much as I did. And I really appreciate you taking the time to chat with us today.
Thanks, Anne. Hope everyone enjoyed our show.
Thank you for joining us for today's episode of Sassy. Subscribe on your favorite podcast platform or join us on LinkedIn at Sassy Podcast to stay in the know about future episodes and guests.